welcome to Stories That Matter, the Hawkwood podcast.
So welcome to Stories That Matter, Hawkwood's podcast series, which invites change makers, thinkers, artists and innovators to discuss the stories that have influenced them, their visions for the future and the actions they are taking to change the world. Today I am with Satish Kumar, who I first met when I worked at Dartington many years ago and who has been leading a course with us this week at Hawkwood in partnership with Schumacher Wild. So Satish is a renowned peace activist, environmentalist and former Jain monk. Inspired by Gandhi, he famously undertook an 8,000-mile peace walk advocating nuclear disarmament. Kumar edited Resurgence and Ecologist magazine for over 40 years and also co-founded Schumacher College in Devon. And it's an absolute honour to have you here with us here today, Satish.
It's my pleasure.
Oh, it's fantastic. So I remember the last time we worked together on a really exciting and innovative project was when I was just about to leave Dartington and we put together the Tagore Festival. Do you remember that?
Yes.
and we were working with Andy Christian and all those wonderful people. And I think that had a really big influence on how, when I came up to Hawkwood, your inspiration and your blessing for me to come here and to take on the role here was really important to me. And what do you remember about that project? Because it was really special, wasn't it?
What I remember about Tagore Festival was that Tagore was a very great influence on Dartington.
Yes.
Leonard Elmhurst went to India. Yes. And stayed with Tagore for 3 years.
Yes.
And when he was coming back to England, Tagore said to him, start a center of excellence for education, for arts, for agriculture, which Tagore himself was doing in India. And so after 150 years of his birthday, there was an occasion to remember Tagore and celebrate his legacy of art, and culture, and agriculture, and education, all those things. So that was a very important moment at Dartington.
I felt it too, and certainly it brought together my world of working at Dartington, which was the arts part of Dartington, and working closely with you and your colleagues at Schumacher College, the sort of environmental and the agriculture and the ecological thinking was all brought together in that festival. It was very special. And I think that's why I find there's quite a deep connection, really, between your work that you have founded for all these years at Schumacher College and Hawkwood, where we are now, which has a similar ethos.
Yes.
And I'd love to hear more about your vision around education and the importance of education and how you put that into the work of Schumacher and what's next for Schumacher.
Yes. Mainstream education is to exploit nature. See nature as a resource for the economy. Nature as a means to an end. So nature is somehow inferior and we humans are superior. Nature is separate, humans are separate. So this is a kind of mainstream educational idea. What I believe that this education is producing people who are exploiting nature and creating destruction of nature, destruction of biodiversity, causing climate change, pollution of oceans, pollution of rivers, pollution of our soil, destruction of rainforests. All these activities are being led by highly educated people. Educated in Oxford, Cambridge, Harvard, Yale, big universities of the world. They are leaders to bring about this pollution, waste, destruction of biodiversity and all that. So we need to change this education and we need to bring a new kind of education which says that humans and nature are not separate. We are nature. And what we do to nature, we do to ourselves. If we pollute water, we have to drink it. If we pollute air, we have to breathe it. If we create global warming, climate change, we have to live with the consequences of that climate change. And so we need to have education which is nature-centered, earth-centered, human value-centered, and also spirituality-centered, art-centered, rather than just money-centered or profit-centered. At the moment, highly educated people are going into business and industry and production and consumerism and all that. So I think education is responsible for most of our problems today. Even wars are led by highly educated people. They are not stupid. They are not peasants. They are not farmers or ordinary people from the villages of Asia or Africa or South America. They are highly educated people in America and Europe. And so I would like to say that we need education to make it more holistic, more spiritual, more artistic, and particularly more nature-centered.
Mm. Thank you so much. That really, really resonates with me. Obviously, it's Hawkwood. We really try and put arts and the ecological thinking, and we run courses on making sure that we're not thinking about ourselves as separate from nature, but how do we connect in a much more meaningful and deep way and have that connection to everything, really.
Yes.
So you have really been an inspiration for me in my work here. And I was wondering about who has really inspired you around education.
I have been inspired by Tagore.
Yes, of course.
He is one of the great inspiration.
Right.
And he started a school in India. And he said to his children, that you have two teachers. I'm your human teacher, but the tree under which we are sitting is also your teacher. Nature is our teacher, and we can learn from nature many, many wonderful things. One thing we can learn from nature is to have no waste. In the natural world, in the forests or fields, there are no waste bins. Everything is recycled, reabsorbed. Nature has a cyclical economy. So everything what comes from nature goes back into nature. But humans have created this industrial economy, which is a linear economy. So you produce, you consume, you throw away, and you create a lot of waste and pollution. So learning from nature was the great teachings of Rabindranath Tagore. Mm. He was also a poet, and
yes.
He was an artist, and he was an agronomist. And so our education needs to learn from that our children need to learn from nature. Every school in Britain or every school in the world should have a garden so that children can learn how a seed goes into the soil and becomes a plant and has blossoms and have fruit. And that fruit ripens and feeds people. So that cycle of life and how nature works and nourishes human beings, that experience should be there in every school. But children don't learn about gardening or growing food or building houses. So Tagore inspired me to bring about this education of head, education of heart, and education of hands. Head, heart, and hands. In England, we say education is about three R's, reading, writing, arithmetic. Mm. But Tagore said the education is about three H's, head, heart, and hands. So, of course, we should have a head. We should learn from our intellect. But also, we have two parts of our head, the left hemisphere of our brain and the right hemisphere of our brain. Modern education is mostly about left hemisphere, rational, administrative, managerial, and all that. Right hemisphere is more intuitive, artistic, imaginative, creative, relational, spiritual. So Tagore inspired me to bring this left hemisphere of the brain and right hemisphere of the brain together, balancing the brain. And then he also taught me to have heart qualities in education, which is compassion, kindness, respect for one another, relationship. All that is heart qualities. Love is heart quality. And then he taught me to use hands. Our hands are a miracle. With our hands, we can transform an ordinary clay into a beautiful pot, an ordinary piece of wood into a beautiful furniture, ordinary piece of cotton into a beautiful garment. Hands can transform ordinary into extraordinary. And so Tagore's teaching in education is to use your hands. Our education at the moment does not use hands, apart from maybe using your smartphone or your computer. So I would say Tagore is one of my great inspirations.
Yeah, fantastic. And it's so wonderful now to see the links from that festival through to one of our artists, who is one of our founding fellows here at Hawkwood, called Shomik Datta.
Yes.
Now, Shomik is now based here, and he grew up in Shantiniketan.
Yes.
And so his whole link to Tagore has come through in the work here, which has been really fascinating to see. So
I'm delighted to hear that.
Yes.
Shomik is a wonderful musician.
He really
and
is.
And if he's working here with you, that's a wonderful.
Yes. No, it's a great honour. He's been creating lots of his new work here, particularly more recently about migration and borders.
Yes.
So what he does as an artist is take a really important pressing issue of our time and integrate it into his art to share and make it accessible for people, which he does so beautifully.
Yes, yes.
In fact, in Stroud, just the other couple of weeks ago, we had a wonderful presentation of his new work called Borderlands. So, yes, he's a very
That's
wonderful
marvelous.
Artist.
That's
yes.
wonderful.
He
yeah,
talks
yeah.
about Tagore.
I mean, in our education, and Hawkwood is a wonderful place leading a more holistic education, we need to make our young people, students, learn not only about practical things like running a business, or every businessman, every industrialist, every politician should also be an artist. Art is not just for few musicians, few painters, few dancers. In India, there was another great man called Ananda Kumara Swami. And he used to say that an artist should not be a special kind of person, but every person should be a special kind of artist. And every person is a special kind of artist. Our gardening should be an art of gardening, art of cooking, art of living, art of making a home. Art should be permeating throughout our life. This idea that art is a specialist thing and just a few chosen people practice art and rest of us are very ordinary and do nothing artistic. So that idea, and Shomik Datta is wonderful, he's a great musician, but I would like to see all of us should be able to sing. All of us should be able to do some dance.
Yeah.
All of us should be able to do some art. Art should be part of life.
Yes, I completely, completely agree.
Yeah.
It's so important to create inspiration and hope as well.
Yes.
So I was thinking about the very much discussed pilgrimage and walk that you took all those years ago, this enormous walk, 8,000 miles. Was it 8,000 miles?
Yes.
My goodness. So how has that been of an influence in your life, that journey?
I mean, that journey has made me a pilgrim of life. Because I went not expecting anything happening. I went as a kind of pilgrimage for peace. It was my offering, my commitment for peace. And by going on foot and going without any money, and depending on the hospitality and kindness of strangers whom I had never met before. And so it was a journey of love and peace, of course. So when I went to Muslim countries, I said, you are Muslims, I love you. When I went to Christian countries, you are Christians, I love you. When I went to communist countries, you are communist, I love you. If you are capitalist, I love you. So that love and that peace, acceptance of all living beings, acceptance of all human beings, acceptance of diversity was the greatest lesson in my journey of 8,000 miles. Because nature favors diversity. Evolution favors diversity. When the world began at the time of Big Bang, there was nothing, only gas and energy. But over billions of years of evolution, we have so many languages, so many cultures, so many philosophies, so many nations, so many religions. All that should be celebrated, rather than fighting against each other, yes, creating division, and that you are wrong and I am right, and this is wrong and that is right. Everything should be celebrated. If you love one another, everything has a place. So my journey around the world, 8,000-mile journey for peace, was a kind of celebration of this unity of humanity manifesting in many, many forms and many diverse expressions and manifestations. And people were very kind. When they saw me, that I'm walking for peace in the world, they said, wow, we are for peace. How can we help you? And they will offer me food. They will offer me bed for the night. They will offer me anything I needed. And so for 2.5 years, without a single penny in my pocket, I went around the world. And I think that was the best journey of my life. And that laid a kind of foundation for the rest of my life. And now I can live like a pilgrim. Because you can live like a tourist, or you can live like a pilgrim. If you're living like a tourist, you want something for yourself. I want good hotels, good food, good restaurants, good guides, good museums, good art, everything for myself. But if you are living a pilgrim, you are living in a relationship. You are coming to a place to offer what you can offer and receive with gratitude. So that's the kind of attitude which I cultivated and developed and learned during that journey around the world.
Absolutely foundational, really, because I can so see the thread of that journey in the work that you have given around your teachings, around the work of you at the Earth Pilgrim, that wonderful course that you developed around Earth Pilgrim. And now you are here in Hawkwood running a course on radical love. What does that mean? And how can you connect to other people? So how has it been this week working around the theme of radical love?
It has been marvelous. First of all, the weather has been absolutely gorgeous. Every
helps.
Day, sun has been shining. So I think I can recommend Hawkwood for everybody. Come here if you want sun.
Wonderful.
Secondly, the view here of the landscape and the valley is so beautiful that this view in itself has a kind of grounding and a kind of love. So I would say it has been a marvelous, marvelous few days here. And we had 17 people.
Yes,
and
wonderful.
And many people came from other countries. Somebody came from Brazil, somebody came from Portugal, somebody came from Switzerland, somebody came from Poland, and Sicily, many, many places. So it was a wonderful, wonderful group. I would say that Hawkwood is one of the kind of beacon of light in our country. And we need centers of this kind of education and learning, many, many, around the country and around the world. Because I don't like these kind of traditional universities where tens of thousands of students just come there for one kind of intellectual learning, left brain education, and getting degree and then getting into jobs. I think that model of education and model of universities need to change. Now we need to have many, many small is beautiful, small centers like Hawkwood College around the country and around the world, where 20, 50, 100 people come, learn at a short time, long time, 1 week, 2 weeks, whatever the model any center can develop. So that's a more decentralized, more small scale, more human, where people can go into nature, they can learn a bit of gardening, they can participate even in cooking, and a kind of holistic education. So I would say Hawkwood, for me, is a kind of pioneer of a new vision for universities, mm-hmm. a university of the future, university of tomorrow, where it's not so centralized, it's not so capital intensive. Millions of pounds you have to spend on universities, and parents have to spend a lot of money taking loans and so on. I think education should be free, and education should be available for anybody. So I think Hawkwood is a wonderful example and a kind of leader in that direction.
Oh, well, that's very lovely to hear.
No, I believe it. I experienced lovely. It here.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's great. It's had a really special feeling this
yes.
week.
That, yes.
But particularly that you create around people working together. And I think that when you are in the room, there's such a deep respect that everyone feels and generates between each other that it feels really special. So thank you very much for being here. It's been lovely.
It's my, and I would like to come again next year if
well,
we
we're
can
going to
arrange
fix
something.
It. Yeah, we're going yeah, to fix yeah, it, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I was interested, so you have worked with many extraordinary people through your life. I'm thinking of Vandana Shiva, for example. You've had a long relationship with Vandana. How did that start? How did you meet one another?
Actually, Vandana's name became familiar to me because there was a Chipko movement.
Okay.
Chipko means hug the trees. There was a company coming into Himalayas to cutting down the teak wood. And these women went in the forest and hugged the trees and said, "Oh, you can't cut our trees. You can't take them away. Government has no authority to give you power to cut down our trees. They give us food, they give us wood, they give us fruit, they give us shelter. Without these trees, we cannot live." And so they hugged it. So the contractors could not cut down the trees. And government had to withdraw their contract from these contractors. And Vandana Shiva was one of them. And when I heard about her name, and she was a scientist, she had a nuclear physics degree, and so when I heard about her, I invited her to England. And I said, "Can you come and give Schumacher lecture?" So that's how we met. And then she wrote a very beautiful book called Staying Alive. That was her first book, and I read it, so I reviewed it in Resurgence. And so that was the beginning. And then she came to Schumacher College, and then I invited her regularly to teach there. And then I said to her that, "You have a 25-acre farm. Why don't you start Schumacher College in India?" And so I went there on her farm, and we said where it should be, and we raised some funds for it, and we created a Schumacher College in India.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so that has been now going on for nearly 25 years. And I have been going almost every year to teach there. So Vandana and I have been a close kind of collaborators and friends and co-workers and colleagues for the last 25 years. And that's how we started to work.
That's
and she's a wonderful,
beautiful.
She's a seed saver.
She is
saving seeds in her farm, distributing to farmers, asking farmers to save seeds. Do not buy any seeds. Do not take any kind of Monsanto seeds or hybrid seeds. They have a traditional heritage seeds from your own farm. Save them, reuse them. Don't buy seeds, but save seeds. That's her great movement.
Yeah, I mean, she's really extraordinary lady.
Yeah, yeah.
And the pair of you together have had such an impact and influence on so many people. It's been wonderful to see. So also it's interesting that you talk about Schumacher College in India, but there are many, many different educational initiatives that have been inspired by your work. So where else are there similar
yes.
Schumacher?
Schumacher College has students, of course, and so these students, after studying at Schumacher College, go into their country back and they start something themselves. So Escola Schumacher in Brazil, so very, very good for going for 10 years. And we just celebrated 10th anniversary.
Fantastic.
Then there's a Schumacher Sprouts in Belgium. There is a campus for transition in France. There is a Shumi garden in China. In Colombia, there is a group. So there are about six or seven groups around the country. And in India, there are two actually. One in South India called Bhumi College, and one in North India with Vandana Shiva called Navdanya. And so these about six or seven offshoots of Schumacher College around the world. But what I would like to see is that not only the centers which have been inspired by Schumacher College that we should work with, but even if other centers which are committed to educating ecological, holistic, spiritual, artistic, and more nature-centered education, we should all work together and we should support each other. Not in any kind of financial way or centralized way, but in a kind of more relationship way. So sharing ideas and sharing contacts and sharing resources. So we are working with quite a number of other organizations and centers around the world.
Which is great, because I think collaboration is absolutely key. I mean, we've talked about this before, haven't we? And I think we can't be in isolation, because actually we need to support each other even with learning on how these things work, what works, what doesn't work, so that we can all thrive together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And another big influence or collaborator, I guess, was James Lovelock.
Yes.
Maybe you'd like to share a little bit about that.
Yes, James Lovelock, fortunately, was my neighbour in Devon. And we used to, before we started Schumacher College, we used to know each other. We used to go walking on Dartmoor, and he used to come to have lunch with us. I would go and have lunch with him. And so, because I was very attracted with his idea of Gaia, and I published his articles in Resurgence magazine. And so I thought that before James Lovelock, most scientists thought that the Earth is a dead rock. It's inanimate. James Lovelock was the first person as a scientist to say that, no, Earth is a living organism. It's not a dead rock. How can dead rock support life? Earth is a living organism, and he called it Gaia. And so when I published his articles, and when I had idea of starting Schumacher College, I said to James Lovelock that I want you to teach at Schumacher College and be the first teacher, because I want to say to the world that Schumacher College is not against science, but we want holistic science, more nature-based science and not nature-exploiting science. And so James said, yes, I'll be delighted to teach, because I don't have any university post and I'm only a writer and a scientist. So it'd be very good to have a living experience with young students. And so he became our first teacher, scholar in residence, for 5 weeks course at Dartington. Mm. And so that was wonderful. And then he regularly taught at Schumacher College every year. And so I would say Gaia is one of the most important scientific theory of last 50 years. Because before that, as I said, we saw Earth as a dead rock. Now scientists can see the Earth as a living organism. Nature is a living organism. And from that also came deep ecology. A deep ecology came that Earth and nature is not only a living organism, but it has its own intrinsic value. The value of nature, value of trees and rivers and animals, is not to be measured in terms of their usefulness to humans. They have their own intrinsic value. They have own intrinsic rights. Like we talk about human rights, we should talk about nature rights, rights of nature. And so that Gaia and deep ecology, these two, one scientific idea and the other philosophical idea, two together make the Schumacher College learning holistic. And so James Lovelock was one of the, I would say, a kind of founding teacher and a great influence on Schumacher College. And then in the very first course, our Stefan Harding was there. Stefan Harding was there. So he became very inspired and influenced by Gaia theory. And therefore, he took it on and started to teach Gaia at Schumacher College. And then Arnie Ness came and taught deep ecology. And so deep ecology became a second strand in our kind of teachings. And so Stefan took both deep ecology and Gaia as a kind of combination. And we all took that, because those two great teachers were very influential. So we all took the Gaia and deep ecology as our main foundation for Schumacher College courses.
Fantastic. So another big thread throughout your life has been your enormous contribution to Resurgence and Ecologist magazine. I mean, it's been around for over 40 years?
60 years.
Is it 60 years?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness
yes.
me.
Yes.
Well, there we
so
go.
So next year, we'll be celebrating the 60th anniversary of Resurgence.
Well, we'll have to have a big party for that.
Big party, yes.
Wonderful.
Yes.
And so what trends and themes have you noticed when you think back to the beginning of Resurgence as it was then? I know later the Resurgence and Ecologist joined together. What sort of changes have you noticed over these 60 years, or the themes coming through?
Yes, in the beginning, E.F. Schumacher was involved, and he brought the idea of small is beautiful in Resurgence magazine. And many of the articles first published in Resurgence came together as an anthology and became a book called Small is Beautiful. And so Schumacher's influence was very strong. And also at that time, when Resurgence started, was peace very important. CND movement, Committee of 100, anti-bomb movement. And so a lot of influence of peace on Resurgence at that time. Then as the time grew, and I went to the first UN conference on the environment in Stockholm in 1972.
Amazing.
And so at that time, Teddy Goldsmith was there, and ecologists had already started. So started to shift a little bit of focus from Small is Beautiful as a social movement and a peace movement. We started to embrace a little bit more ecology movement. Because we said that peace is not enough, just the absence of war. Peace is more than absence of war or absence of nuclear weapons. Peace is a way of life. And you have to have peace within yourself. If you are not at peace, how can you be at peace in the world? And how can you make peace with others? Also, you have to make peace with nature. At the moment, we are treating nature as if it does nothing, destroying rainforests and treating animals in factory farms, and all that kind of treatment of nature is like war with nature. And so the focus of Resurgence sort of broadened, and we said peace is a much bigger issue than just the kind of anti-bomb or anti-war movement. And so peace, more is beautiful, ecology, Gaia, all these things evolved. And so now I would say, as Guardian described Resurgence, as the kind of artistic and spiritual flagship of the green movement.
Yes, I love that, actually.
Yes.
I really do think it's so beautifully produced as well, to really reflect the ethics of the content as well. The whole thing just feels lovely.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's a huge, huge success, the magazine.
Yeah.
So
think. Next year we'll be celebrating our 60th anniversary, and now Resurgence has a center in North Devon. We have our own place, and we run Resurgence and Ecologist as one magazine, because Ecologist was started by Teddy Goldsmith. When he passed away, then Zach Goldsmith took over, but then he became MP and then House of Lords and so on. So we combined two together. So let's join our forces together. And so that's the magazine together. Then also we run the Ecologist on the online Ecologist. And we also organize events, online events. So last year, in 2024, we had 8,600 people attending our events online.
My goodness me, that is a huge impact, isn't it?
And we keep these events free, and people donate. We ask them donations.
Yes.
And last year, we received £73,000 in donations.
Well, that just shows because people want to support the work and they feel it's really important.
Yes.
Well, congratulations, because that must have been very heartening for you to feel that the work was recognised as well.
Yes,
wonderful.
And people are benefiting from it. All the ideas and all the time.
Absolutely. And so as we sit here in 2025, there are a lot of... it's an interesting time, right? And we see the sort of disruption in global relationships at the moment, which are very challenging. And we are also seeing sort of the rise of artificial intelligence and how we're working with AI and what that might mean for the future. So thinking about our younger generation, what in your view is it really important for them to hold on to as they navigate this increasingly complex world? What would you say to the younger generation today?
I would say to younger generation that do not try to become unwittingly a slave of technology. Technology should be a servant and not a master. If you succumb to technology and follow technology rather than technology follows you, then technology can become master and you become the servant. And that is not a good state, because human beings are so unique. I mean, just imagine this body, our intelligence, our imagination, our creativity, our skillfulness, we being able to build a house, build furniture, grow food with these two hands. This is a wonderful technology that our body is. Why should we lose it and just depend on these machines, which are not as good as our body? So technology is good if it is helpful to humans, and helping hands is good. But if technology replaces humans and discards the use of hands, and just technology can do everything automatically and artificially intelligent, then I think that technology can become master and humans can become slave, and that's not a good state. So I would like to warn young people to be cautious. Use technology as your aid and as your help and as as your servant, but not as your master.
Very, very wise words indeed. Thank you, Satish.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here thinking we've had a really rich, full conversation as ever, truly inspirational. Is there anything that you would like to share that I haven't asked you about?
I mean, you have asked everything, so I think it's quite fulsome. Only thing I can add is that in this course at Hawkwood, we had Radical Love. And in conclusion, I said that there are groups of people who always want external transformation, outer transformation, social change, political change, industrial change, outer. Some other people are only inner change. Be kind, be compassionate, be nice, don't bother about the world, just be yourself. I would like to see that we need to bring these two together. We need to have external change as well as internal change. If I don't change, how can I change the world? But if I just change myself and not act and serve others, then it's also limited. So, in conclusion, in this course at Hawkwood, we said that we need to walk on two legs. External change and internal. And they go hand in hand together.
Absolutely.
Like a radiator. Yeah. Radiator radiates itself. It's hot, it's warm. And then it radiates the radiator and the warmth and the heat, and other people become warm. And so we should become the radiators of change. We are changed. Be the change that you want to see in the world, but also help the change to bring about in the world.
Well, what a fitting way to end this lovely conversation. I'm going to go away and be a radiator.
Okay.
Wonderful. Oh.
Oh. Wonderful. You are an idiot already.
Well, it's just been so lovely to catch up and to share this time with
My
you.
My pleasure.
And thank you for being here at Hawkwood this week.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Stories That Matter, the Hawkwood podcast. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe, tell your friends, sign up to our mailing list, or on social media.